You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Kim Hahn.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 1st, 2019.
You know, everybody has a story to tell. And I really enjoy creating things and then putting them out there and hoping that people engage with them.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with disability advocate and journalist Adria Nassim on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Sarah Laughlin talks about her work at Teachers Warehouse on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Today, Nicholas Kappas announced his run for the 3rd District City Council race. Kappas currently serves on the Bloomington Plan Commission. WFHB's Macy Evans has more on his announcement.
Independent candidate Nick Kappas announced his bid for Bloomington's District 3 City Council seat today. The Herald Times reports Kappas received 102 signatures in support of his run, surpassing the 89 required to enter the race. A quality system specialist at Cook Medical, Kappas serves on the City of Bloomington Plan Commission and the Board of Zoning Appeals. Kappas is an active cyclist and former Little 500 coach. He told the Herald Times, if elected, one priority for District 3 is multimodal paths for people traveling on bikes and scooters. Options for commuters is part of his plan to stem traffic on the east side of town. Current District 3 City Councilwoman Allison Chopra is not seeking re-election. Ron Smith won the Democratic primary in May. His opponent, Jim Blickensdorf, dropped out of the race after a scandal involving his management of a Bedford strip club. Kappas will face Smith, as well as fellow independent candidate Marty Speckler. The general election will take place November 5th. For WFHB, I'm Macy Evans.
A new Indiana state law taking effect today increases penalties for violating school bus stop arm laws. The new law raises the misdemeanor charge for passing a school bus when the stop arm is extended. The charge is elevated from a Class B to Class A minus. And the fine will increase from $1,000 to $5,000. The law allows courts to suspend the license of a driver who violates school bus stop arm law for up to 90 days. A repeat offender may have their license suspended for a year. Indiana legislators passed the law following a tragic accident in Fulton County where 3 young children were killed while crossing a street to board a school bus. The law also adds new requirements for school buses. Buses must now have black reflective tape on both the front and rear bumpers and on the sides. Buses must also use daytime running lights. Bus drivers must use extended arm signal devices and flashing lights whenever they stop to pick up or drop off students.
Other new laws take effect today. One allows doula services to be reimbursed by Medicaid. A doula is a non-medical birth coach who provides support to the mother before, during, and after birth. According to research published in the Journal of Perinatal Education, doula-assisted mothers are less likely to experience complications at birth. In his 2018 State of the State address, Governor Eric Holcomb voiced his commitment to reducing Indiana's infant mortality rate. Indiana has the 7th highest infant mortality rate in the nation. Holcomb's goal is to significantly lower Indiana's infant mortality rate by 2024.
Unpaid textbook rental fees are growing at the Monroe County Community School Corporation. John Kenny, the director of business operations, says around 2,000 individual student accounts went to collections for the most recent school year. The accounts total more than $300,000 in unpaid rental fees. On hearing the news, school board member Brandon Schur was taken aback.
Is that normal? I just want to know, is that like normal?
It's been rising through the years. Okay. Since the recession, we've seen more. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
In a presentation to the school board on June 25th, Kenny said state law prevents school corporations from charging more than 25% of the textbook's retail price.
Practically, that means you have to amortize the expense over at least 4 years, and you're not charging full expense in 1 year per the code.
Schur asked Kenny how much MCCSC charges for textbooks. Kenny said the fees vary over time.
It varies ever so slightly between 5 and 6 years, so you would divide that out. That would be between 16, 17, and 20%. There may be one case where we do 25%. It varies year to year, and the curricular material, how long we expect to have it.
Kenny said the statute does allow for rental fee assistance. Families that qualify for free and reduced lunch also qualify for free textbooks, and payment plans are available.
We establish payment plans if necessary to spread the cost out over the year for students and families. And Indiana is one of only 8 states that do not provide free curricular materials to all public school students.
Kenny said families get 3 notifications throughout the school year, and extenuating circumstances are taken into consideration. Once unpaid accounts go to collections, he said, the school corporation only gets back a portion of the overdue fees. Board member Sue Wanzer asked Kenny whether the transition to computer-based work had reduced textbook rentals, but Kenny said textbook use has remained steady. Wanzer then initiated a discussion with Kenny and Superintendent Judy DeMuth about how the textbooks are chosen.
Nobody here wants to add on a whole lot of costs to anyone, so how are decisions made to be as frugal as possible with the books that we get?
I think under Dr. Winston's leadership, we are really ramping up for a comprehensive annual. Not that we didn't before, we always did, but the way I've seen just last year and what I know is heading into this year with parent involvement, teacher involvement, board if needed.
Well, let me just interject there. First of all, it's dictated by state law in terms of the committees that we have. We ramped it up because a concern was brought to us. But quite frankly, the more people you involve in the process, it's a runaway train financially. Right. Yeah. So that's all well and good, but I have to take the responsibility of saying, no, we're not going to get 5 workbooks. We're going to get a book. And so we have to constantly work. It's constantly massaging it, so to speak, to make sure that we don't get too much, make sure it's cost effective for our parents, but the teachers are comfortable with the types of resources they have to be able to instruct children. So it's a constant balancing act.
DeMuth said MCCSC has held its textbook acquisition and pricing steady compared to many Indiana public school corporations. Wanzer, DeMuth, and school board president Lois Sabo Skelton said the issue deserves further consideration.
And I can see Brandon being a little stressed, and I think the rest of us are too, and I'm going to ask President Sabo Skelton and the superintendent, if maybe we can talk about this at some other point and see if there's a way of working with the foundation or anybody else to help. I don't know. Maybe we can't. Maybe there's nothing to do. Maybe it means, like I always say, electing different state legislators who will cover books in the free and appropriate public education.
I think you got the answer right there. And now we all know what we're up against. But, of course, we'll continue to look into it. We'll continue to look into maybe other ways of solving these problems.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Let me just add one thing. You know, it's really interesting to me that this is always an issue at the local level, but there's nobody up in Indianapolis. And we just finished the biggest session ever, and no one talked about textbooks. So parents need to, if they're concerned about textbook rental, get up to Indianapolis and address the legislators on textbook rental, because nobody was talking about textbook rental.
In other business, DeMuth thanked the parent-teacher organization at Marlin Elementary. The PTO has paid off their students' school lunch debt. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Kim Hahn.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
On today's episode of Big Talk Extra, podcast producer Jeremy Scher talks with WFHB correspondent Michael Glab.
You've written a lot of articles. For a while, you specialized in sort of a science thing with a little even deeper specialization in energy.
Yeah.
And I want to mention you're the author of a 2013 book published by St. Martin's Press, Renewable, A Reporter's Quest to Make Sense of the Coming Revolution in Alternative Energy.
That's right.
Did you have to bone up on chemistry and global economics to figure out all this energy stuff?
Not exactly that. I certainly didn't bone up on chemistry. I think that's beyond my capabilities. And I'm certainly no expert in economics. And frankly, I want to make clear to listeners, I am not an expert on energy or renewable energy, despite having written this book. I know a lot about it, but I wrote the book. I mean, the short story here is that I was doing a lot of science writing.
Yes.
For A Moment of Science, for Sound Medicine, doing some other freelance stuff. And I just felt like, well, maybe I want to try writing a book on some kind of science topic. I wasn't sure what. So I got in touch with a literary agent and pitched some ideas. And the first things that I sent out actually went nowhere. Uh-huh. So doing a book on renewable energy was actually a publisher's idea.
Oh.
And so I thought, okay, well, I don't know a ton about that, but I can educate myself. And so I started reading up about it, wrote a proposal. And then I did find a publisher who was willing to pay me sort of a pittance to write the book. It was a small amount of money, but they were going to publish it. And so I went about educating myself about renewable energy and what that is, how it works, why it's interesting, and ended up writing a whole book about it.
Following the release of that book, you gave a TEDx Bloomington talk about renewable energy.
Right.
You led that talk off by talking about the 1889 Paris World's Fair.
That's right.
Where, and gosh, I didn't know this, that they had a solar power generator there.
Right.
Did you know this before you started getting into this?
No, not at all.
Tell me
about
that.
It was all news to me. So, I mean, it's really fascinating. So the reason that that became the topic of that TEDx talk is because the book ended up being much more historical than I thought it might be. When I set out at first, I thought, well, I'm going to travel around the country, which I did, and meet scientists and go to renewable energy installations like solar farms, wind farms, geothermal plants. And I did all that stuff. And that's in the book, but the bulk of it ended up being more historical. And that wasn't the plan. But once I started digging into the histories of these technologies, which I felt I needed to do just to understand them, I realized that's what really interested me the most.
But what's surprising is that they actually do have history.
Oh, yeah.
This is not all brand new stuff.
No, it's not at all. And in some ways, it's surprising, and in some ways, it's not, right?
Yeah.
Like solar energy, people have been using the sun for power forever. It is the original source of any kind of energy. I mean, you know, the sun is the source of all energy on the planet, right?
Right.
It makes plants grow and animals eat plants and then other animals eat animals, et cetera. Wind power, of course, goes way, way back. People have been using wind to power ships, you know, ever since ships with sails were invented. In any case, it was fascinating to learn the histories of these things. And that sort of became part of the point of the book, that you might look at a giant wind tower or a shiny solar panel and think, wow, well, this stuff is brand new. It's sort of futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, well, no, it's actually been with us all along. And that It's really, fossil fuel energy, which is much more recent.
Yeah.
If you look at sort of the grand scope of history. And that's not to denigrate fossil fuel energy. I mean, there are plenty of issues with it and, you know, emissions and global warming and such. But it's really powered the modern world. I mean, our world wouldn't be the way it is without the discovery of coal and oil and so on. In any case, though, in the one thing that was interesting to me is in the grand scheme of history, we've been using renewable resources much longer than fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And now we're in a moment where there's renewed interest in renewable energy. And it looks a bit different, or it's on a larger scale, but it's really nothing new.
Now, right in this area, you can drive over to the Indy Airport, and as you're going in the access road, you see this huge field of solar panels. And then if you take I-65 north between Indy and Lafayette, you see those miles and miles and miles of huge turbines.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like something out of a science fiction magazine.
Right.
But it's old hat.
It is.
Yeah.
It's just bigger.
It's bigger.
It looks really cool. But, you know, the landscape, especially across the Midwest, anywhere there were farms, used to be dotted with windmills.
Right.
On a smaller – the windmills were smaller.
Yeah.
But every farm, you know, many homesteads would have its windmill for dredging up water or powering small appliances, stuff like that.
You did a lot of science work before as a writer, as a speaker and all that. Do you miss that?
In some ways. I mean, I looked at, you know, just to be clear, I am not a scientist. You know, I have no training in science. I was a science writer, which meant that I got into interviewing a lot of scientists and writing about science for regular people.
Right.
I really enjoyed that in many ways because there's an endless amount of stuff to write about. Science is fascinating. I got to talk to many, many really, really smart people about what they do. And it was cool to be able to at least try my best to translate that stuff into language that just anybody can understand. But it's not like – so in some ways I miss it. But in other ways, I just like creating things. You know, I like writing. I like producing things. I like putting stuff out there for people to engage with. So whether it's science or whether it's telling local Bloomington stories – in some ways, it's kind of all the same to me. It's all interesting. It's all fascinating. You know, everybody has a story to tell. And I really enjoy creating things and then putting them out there and hoping that people engage with them.
Well, one of the things that you put out there is the B-Town Lowdown. How often can we catch it?
Okay, well, it comes out every week. I publish the episodes every Monday morning, like literally 12 a.m. Monday morning is when they come out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for those people listening who don't listen to podcasts or you've never done it or you're only kind of vaguely aware, the way it works, of course, is that it's on demand.
Right.
So if you find a show that you like and you subscribe to it on your phone through an app, say, then you can listen to it whenever you want.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have to listen only at that time when it comes out. It comes out and then it's there pretty much forever. So you can listen to, the current episode whenever you like. You can listen to back episodes whenever you like. You know, there are tens of thousands out there in the world. And they're pretty much all free. And you can subscribe to any of them and listen to them whenever you like. And because it's audio, you can listen when you're doing other things.
Right.
When you're working out, when you're walking your dog, when you're folding the laundry or preparing dinner. It's so convenient, and it really is this rich world of audio.
That was Jeremy Scher with Big Talk's Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk aired Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, I'm Sarah Laughlin, and I volunteer with Teachers Warehouse in Bloomington. I think I got involved about 2010 as a member of the Bloomington Rotary Club, which is the founding organization of Teachers Warehouse. I had heard about it there. I was curious about what it was. I went over and started volunteering, and I found that I really am very passionate about the mission, which is really supporting teachers who are supporting their kids. And so our job really is to save money for teachers who spend an awful lot of their money, maybe $500 a year out of their own pockets, to buy supplies for their kids in their classroom, support their students who are in poverty, who might not have the basics to just do the regular assignments, and also to encourage creativity. I was just coming in on Saturdays. I was still working, so that was the time when I could come in. And I found that made me feel good. I liked the people. I liked the other volunteers. I liked talking to the teachers about what they were going to do with the things they were taking out. And then after I retired, I moved to a weekday scheduled volunteer time, and now I'm the president of the board. So I'm there quite a bit working on board work and filling in for maybe somebody who couldn't come. We're completely volunteer powered. I always had a deep appreciation for teachers and the work that they do. But seeing them come in and shop and talking about what they're trying to do and what they're struggling with and how they're trying to engage, you know, maybe a particular student who's struggling or a whole group of students who are struggling has made me feel like I'm really doing something that's important just at the grassroots level. And I also enjoy being part of the group of volunteers there who are equally passionate and come from all over the, you know, every walk of life, and they're all ages, and that is it's really kind of a family. It's really a highlight of my week. And I feel like our work in engaging the broader community is also an ongoing challenge and something that it's worth doing. It feels like I'm leveraging my own support by bringing in other people. I brought a letter from one teacher. This is a teacher from RBB, and she says, thank you for donating. This is a letter that one of our donors received as a thank you note. Thank you for donating materials to the Teacher's Warehouse. Most of my students struggle in school, are in remediation, or at a lower level course. Many of their families would have difficulty affording the educational tools I have for them because of Teacher's Warehouse. A box of colored pencils or pens or tape or other such items may not seem like much, but without them, the learning would be much more difficult. Consequently, having these materials enhances my teaching. Please allow me to extend the appreciation of all my students. We get these, you know, regularly, and they are heartfelt, and it really does create, for me, a picture of what a difference those pencils and paper and crayons are doing in that classroom and for that teacher and the kids that are there. For me, Teachers Warehouse is a very tangible way of giving back, of being part of something bigger than myself in my community. I had a job a few years ago where I worked with those schools, and so I know those outlying schools as well as the, you know, the Monroe County Community Schools and RBB, which are still have a large number of students in poverty, but not nearly as many as the surrounding counties. So I feel like I'm really personally, you know, part of a team that's making a bigger difference, and I really like that. Thanks for listening. I'm Sarah Laughlin. I'm a volunteer with Teachers Warehouse.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Macy Evans, G. Park, and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumpstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wagermiller.
And I'm Kim Hahn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.
Mondays at 6 p.m., lock in your radio dial for Bring It On, a locally produced public affairs program serving the African-American community. I'm Jim Sims.
And I'm Beverly Callender Anderson. Bring It On is Indiana's only dedicated radio forum celebrating the rich and vibrant culture of Black people in Bloomington and beyond. It's a positive and uplifting program.
But at the same time, we're not afraid to talk about race and racial stereotypes and challenge all the lines that divide us. If you want to bring down walls, you gotta swing a hammer.
So join us for Bring It On, exploring African American culture every Monday at 6 p.m.
here on Community Radio WFHB.
Join us Tuesdays at 6 p.m. on WFHB for Interchange, a weekly conversation exposing you to a world beyond your fence row, featuring conversations with authors, activists, and artists that will unsettle the way you think about the world. Interchange, Bloomington's longest-running public affairs program. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. on WFHB.